Chapter 35. It was past 1 a.m. when he re-entered the corrugated steel building in West Dallas. He was carrying a copy of the Dallas Morning News under his left arm and a large coffee in his right hand. After closing the door behind him, he stood very still, listening for signs of life from the rude blonde. Not that he had done much to her beyond toying with her head. Hell, he'd even reset her dislocated shoulder and bathed her a few times. He'd fed her, too. In her way, she was very lucky. Under nearly any other set of circumstances, she would be begging him to kill her to stop the pain. But no, he had other plans for her. Big plans. Hearing nothing but the buzz of traffic from the highway, he put the coffee and the paper down. He stripped out of his sweat-dampened waiter clothing. Clip-on bow tie, the white tuxedo shirt, black polyester pants, black socks, the ugly gum-soled black shoes. Perfect camouflage for an invisible man doing an invisible job. He sniffed the shirt and gagged. It stank of sautéed shrimp in sriracha sauce. He hated seafood, shrimp most of all, and the Asian pepper sauce had burned his eyes. Yet he had had to stand at the shrimp station for 3 hours in the main hall of the Perot Museum as wealthy Texans got progressively drunker, sloppier, and more inane. He wondered who had first said that thing about there being no dumb questions. Whoever said it, he thought, had never worked in catering. At least 11 times during the evening, party guests had approached him and asked if those were shrimp he was serving. 11. Exactly 11. He had counted. And each time it was all he could do not to scream at them, "What else do you think they are? Wood grubs with tails?" People were such fools. But he just smiled his smile at them, placing a tablespoon of oil, 12 shrimp, and a ladle of the red pepper sauce in the hot pan. His shoulder ached from having to deal with that heavy pan. But he did enjoy watching the heat turn the shrimp's sickly gray flesh white and pink. He liked what fire did to flesh. He thought about sponge bathing himself, but realized that he had work to do. He had to start working on Jen's wedding gift. After that, he would clean himself up and get some rest. He had another job for a different catering company later that afternoon. At least he wouldn't have to wear the same outfit. The other catering company was all about casual. Golf shirt, jeans, and running shoes were all they required. And, mercifully, they didn't usually do shrimp. Mercifully. He laughed at himself for even thinking of that word. More than knives or fire or pliers, mercy and hope were his greatest devices for the delivery of pain. Then his contemplation of pain was disturbed by the sound of the rude blonde stirring. He picked up the paper and the coffee and went into the workshop area, where she was tied down to the bench. He flicked on the light. She turned her head to look at him, and when she saw he was mostly undressed, she began screaming into her gag and pulling on her restraints. He hadn't realized and placed the paper and coffee down. "Shh," he said, stroking her hair. "I don't do that. I never do that. If I'd wanted to do that to you, I would have done it before now. It was just a long, miserable day at work, and I had to get out of those clothes. I'm sorry. See? If you had only said sorry to me, you wouldn't be here." She had a brief crying jag. When she calmed, he showed her the paper. "You're famous," he said, pointing to the large photo of her adorning the front page. "This picture doesn't do you justice, though." Her eyes got wide at the sight of her photo and the headline about her having gone missing days ago. He laughed at her when he saw a glimmer of hope in her red-rimmed blue eyes. She had hope, and if things progressed as he planned, hers might actually not go unfulfilled. But there was a lot of work to be done before he determined her fate. First, he grabbed a chair, sipped his coffee, and opened the paper. "Says your name is Belinda June Yankton, and that you're 29. They got that much right, at least according to your driver's license. You'd be amazed at the details newspapers get wrong." She didn't move, didn't make a sound, for fear of angering him. A cheerleader at the University of North Texas. Yes, I can see that. I can only imagine how rude you were to the ugly boys and the fat girls at school. He felt the heat rising in him as he remembered how she'd treated him at the barbecue joint. But he needed her in spite of a suddenly acute desire to hurt her. "Divorced already from one of Dallas's leading young attorneys," he said, going back to the paper. "I can see that, too. It would account for your fancy address in that car of yours. I bet your ex is rooting against you. Bet you he'd like to have some time with you, trussed up this way. What do you think, Belinda June? Maybe I'll seek him out and ask him." She shook her head violently, and the crying started all over again. He took a long sip of coffee and folded the paper. He walked over to her and said, "I have a lot of work to do, and I need quiet. Would you like to go to sleep and dream again?" She nodded, straining to say a gag-muffled, "Yes." "First, you need to drink. And remember, no talking when I remove the gag. I have need of you, but don't misbehave. I don't need you that much that I can't find a substitute." 10 minutes and 2 bottles of cold Gatorade later, Belinda June Yankton was unconscious and well on her way to some vivid dreams. Peepers was drilling a fuse hole into a length of pipe.